that the two reports that the Public Service Commission has tabled with Parliament. We are also going to reflect, so let's add an item, the first item is adoption of outstanding minutes and reports. And second item is consideration of the Public Service Commission's report on, there are two reports there. Let's add the third item, which is the Public Administration Management Bill. We'll just have to touch on something like that, because there is something that looks like formally or officially tabling or submitting. If people play with words, maybe you can table, you can submit as different things. No, okay. Second time. I see, you see, important people are not into just one. then the rest of us are members of this committee for some time. Now, welcome, Dr. Rukmarin. For some time we have not been with you. We miss you so much. The committee is still intact. Still dealing with our work, so, but we are moving forward. On the minutes and the reports, there are those minutes. Those minutes we looked at them. Those of us were there at our meeting last week. We did the grammar, the spell checks, the content check, where they decide they reflect the business of the respective dates that we had those meetings, because they are minutes of several meetings. Actually, for some time, we have not been adopting minutes. We have taken a decision that at each and every meeting, we must actually have that outstanding item. But we had those outstanding minutes, and we corrected them. Like I said, we checked the content. The only thing that we did not do was to adopt them, because we were not that much correcting. We're not forming a quorum. So we do form a quorum today. I'll then want to play this minute. Let's start with minute first. We have the minute of the 27th of February, the minute of the 5th of March, 7th of March, 12th of March, 4th of June, the 4th of June is a new minute. We'll deal with that at the last. 8th of May, the 14th of May, 14th of March, those are the minutes. Let members check those quickly, more especially on the attendance part, because at the end of the year when we compile a committee annual report and we say member A, member Z attended so many meetings, we are guided by this minute. I was approached last year by one honorable member who wanted us to amend the minute when we're compiling the annual report. To say, no, the minutes of January, that was in December. The minutes of January were not correct. So he requested that we should amend, so that we could put his name, because according to his recollection, he attended that meeting, and I said, no, it's too late. Let's take that. Otherwise, I'm putting the minutes for the committee to decide. Any move for a blanket adoption? Those of us were there at the meeting last week. The minutes moving, any second? Seconded, the minutes are adopted. Now let's look at the minutes of last meeting. This one's a new. I haven't read that myself, but we can quickly look at that. Okay. But I don't think it's necessary to adopt this minute, because that meeting did not form a quorum. So it was just like the other moment. Fine, thanks. Let's look at the report. Yeah, it did. The 28th of May, that's the one who said we did not check that at all that meeting. But you have a copy of that. Yeah, let's look at that now separately. Look at the minutes of the 28th of May. The present, the absent, the apologies, chairperson opened the meeting. Can you quickly go through that? You have 2 minutes of reading. The report here. This is our report. We have considered the budget vote for public service and administration. The vote that actually also shaped your speeches when you're debating in the House. We know that there is a parliamentary process where we're going to decide on each vote. Is it coming next week? Yeah, on Tuesday. But we're then saying, as a committee, we need to express an opinion if there's anything that we have to say. So what in short we are saying, because on the introduction, the report is just indicating what the various areas and programs, where we're allocating money, and then how that's going to be spent, and all those things. But what is critical is for us as a committee, we are saying that we know that our parties, when we consider the various votes next week on Tuesday, Sunday. Can I get a move? Sunday and Thursday for the coach. May Machang want a move? Matomela second. Is that? Going to be report yesterday. We have dealt with the report such that we take a decision as a committee as to what is it that we do. You see, the PSC report, some come with recommendations. You remember the committee has been saying we submit reports to Parliament with recommendations, but then there is no feedback in terms of what then happened. We will have to, this report has been referred to us, we'll have to report to Parliament that we have considered this report. And having considered this report, this is what we are seeing. There will be areas where we need Parliament to put emphasis on. There will be areas that we then say we need to actually work on that ourselves as a committee. So our final report will be produced from what we discussed here today. So having dealt with that, what then remains, it will then be for us, our secretary, would then be for her to put whatever discussion in the format of portfolio committee reporting to Parliament that we adopt next week and we'll send that through. So I think, and I hope I'm clear there, and with that understanding, let me then say on the M&E report, Prof, over to you to then indicate then from the MMS will come on board. Then all of us are going to debate on that. If we want this to take the old approach of saying they'll present, leave, we remain considering the report and stuff like that, we are not going to finish the Public Service Commission report that we have with us this year. And unfortunately, we'll be part of those people who contribute in dumping work for the next Parliament, which one would suggest that we should not do that. Thanks. Over to you, Professor.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. I hope my bloody voice comes out.
Thank you very much, Chair, for this opportunity once more to present the report as you have outlined. Perhaps before I go on, I'll take this opportunity to introduce to you my colleagues. I'm accompanied by Commissioner David Macheho, who is very well known to you in his previous life, was in this precinct here in Parliament. He is our provincially based commissioner in Mpumalanga. I have also the senior officials from the public office of the Public Service Commission, Mr. Admiral Simpson, Deputy Director General, and Mr. Imran Naidu, the Chief Director in the Office of the Public Service Commission. We are in your hands, Chair. We thought we would make a brief presentation of the contents and direction of the report with the recommendations that arise out of the report, as we have indicated, and then would leave it to you to discuss and examine the report. I suppose that would be acceptable. If that is the route we take, let me say then before I ask Indran to take the committee through the report briefly by highlighting what's contained in the report. Perhaps to conceptualize this report, I think it's important to point two or three issues here. One, that, and this needs hardly to be, and it's hardly to be repeated, to say that Chapter 10 is really the basis of the operations of our governance, public administration, because Chapter 10 outlines the values and principles which should govern our public administration. Values of ethics, values of efficiency, effectiveness, and economy, the values of participation, allowing people, our citizens to participate in policy making, the values of accountancy, accountability, values of transparency, the values of equitable service delivery, the values of a developmental state. These are the values enshrined in our Constitution. Now, we in the Public Service Commission are entrusted with the responsibility of promoting these values. And the question arises, how do we promote the values. The Constitution also provides a very useful guide on how we should promote these values, because the Constitution says the Commission should investigate, Commission should monitor, Commission should evaluate the organization and administration, as well as personal practices of the public service. And this report on monitoring and evaluation is precisely the report on how the Public Service Commission has promoted the values and principles by developing an instrument for monitoring and evaluation the implementation of the values. That's really, in a nutshell, what the report is about, the instrument that we have developed to look at the various departments. The way we have been doing this is to select departments, both provincially and nationally, and go in there with the instrument to apply the instrument to determine, in order to determine the extent to which the departments are complying with the values and principles outlined in the Constitution. With that, Chair, I would ask Imran to take us quickly through how we have done this and what is the outcome and what are the recommendations of our findings in this regard. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Prof. Thank you, Chair, honorable members. You have in front of you a hard copy of the consolidated report. You also have a PowerPoint presentation together with the narrative. What I will do is take us through the report, but just highlight the main points, not slide by slide. I think to start off by saying that the public service M&E system has now been in operation since 2000. It's our 8th year of operation. We have covered 75 departments across the country, national and provincial. In many cases, we've gone back into the departments for the second time, so we're working off that baseline. As Prof has mentioned, it's a department that hinges on the 9 constitutional values and principles for public administration. That is our norms and standards against which we assess. We generate baseline data, and we're able to compare performance of departments subsequently. Ideally, we'd like to go back to a department once per 3 years. We're starting to do that now that we have increased our sample. Last year, we did 22 departments. That report will be produced shortly, the 5th consolidated. Currently, we are doing 25 departments in there. The intention, of course, is to produce high-level data per department that we feed back to the top management of a department and to score them. So we actually score per principal and overall on a scale from 1 to 5. 1 meaning none of the standards have been met, 5 meaning all the standards have been met. The way this report works, this consolidated report, it takes the 16 departments of the last cycle, and it puts them into 3 categories. Those that are below satisfactory, which is 60% and below. Those that are 60%, which is satisfactory, and those that are above. So if you go through the report, you'll find all the departments per principal have been rank ordered in terms of very good, in terms of very bad. But sometimes what happens, some departments do very well in one principal and not so well in another principal. So that's just a point that we would need to note. The methodology has been refined over the years, and we're now at a point, Chair, honorable members, where before we finalize the report from the PSC goes and presents the findings to top management of every department in the country that we do. So we have a full meeting, we present the findings, we have a debate, we have a discussion, we give them 10 days in which to make further input, and then we finalize the report. And generally the feedback that we've been getting is the department say that that is them. They do quibble about the score, they don't like low scores, but they say that is there. The good news of the system is that apart from using secondary information, we draw on the annual report as well as the reports of the Auditor General, we also generate fresh information. So we believe that in doing this, we are producing good governance, because it increases transparency and accountability, and these reports are publicly available. Every top management gets it, they also get it electronically, so the whole department knows, you know, what is happening. And we've refined, we've got a truckload of these. The point that you make, Chair, is in terms of recommendations, every report has a set of recommendations. So on average, there's about 15 recommendations per department. We we draw these recommendations into the consolidated M&A, into our report on recommendations, and we go back 3 months later and we see what they have implemented. So we're able to give a statistic in terms of the implementation rate per department. And obviously, because they know that we report to committees, that figure is improving. Just in terms of the slides, the overall trends in performance for the period 2000 to 2007, because we have all this data, we've looked at the information over a period of time, we find that the average performance from the time we started the system, it really ranges from 28% to 48%. That's if we take the 9 principles, we divide, and then we come up with a score. And it shows that in most cases, development is still needed in the standards. So there has been a slight improvement, but we are not at a point where we can definitively say that departments are performing at a satisfactory level. In terms of the 2006-07 research cycle, the report that you have before you, we found that 19% of the 16 departments scored 60% and above, which indicates that the performance is between adequate and excellent. So 60% and above is adequate and excellent, and you see the graph in the report. But 81% of the 16 departments scored an average between 23 and 56%, meaning that it was actually below satisfactory. So we had just 20%, one-fifth of our sample, in the excellent category, and most of them were either satisfactory or below satisfactory. We now move on to the scores for the individual principles. The first principle is professional ethics. As we note in the report, we look at the extent to which departments deal with the cases of professional of misconduct. And our argument, our thesis, is that if departments are decisive in dealing with disciplinary cases, it shows that it actually filters into the rest of the department that it's promoting professional ethics. Because if people are acted upon who would digress, it sends a message that, that misconduct will not be tolerated. So that's what we look at. We zoom into the whole case management system of misconduct. And we found that it was a bimodal case. Half the department scored well and half scored underperformed. So 50% were above satisfactory, 50% were below satisfactory. Just in terms of some highlights, we also are able to show in the report the best performers and the worst performers. So for this particular principle, the best performer was public enterprises. The next element we look at is how fast do departments deal with cases of misconduct. It comes to the attention of the public that cases drag on for 1, 2, 3 years. The stipulation is between 20 and 80 days. So we do a physical count, and we find that the hearings must be held between that period. 75% of the departments were unable to finalize their cases within that period, and that's where it leads to further dispute and labor issues. The next issue we found is that how does the whole question of management reporting, if cases of misconduct are reported to management, we would argue that it makes them aware and they're more likely to be sensitive to this issue. But we find that whilst it was done on a regular basis, 75%, the reports are not always acted on. So there isn't that follow-through that happens. The most common case of misconduct, honorable members, is absenteeism. That's the most common part here. And, of course, we state that if it is not managed, it impacts on the morale of the rest of the staff, because if officials are not there, nothing happens to them. Everyone else tends to take it a bit easy, because they say nothing is happening to that official. The next principle, the economy, efficiency, and effectiveness, this is your rounds and cents principle. We looked very closely at the whole money management system of a department. We found that 20% of the departments performed above satisfactory, but 81% underperformed, with the exception of our public enterprises. So once again, when we look at our various standards and indicators, there is room for concern. And this is obviously supported by other findings that is presented to you in terms of the report of the Auditor General, in terms of SOP 2008 report, where we show the trend information, etc. It seems that departments still are having a problem in defining their measurable indicators. When we talk about measurable indicators, we talk about does it have an element of quality, quantity, and time. And if you can't define upfront what you're going to do, you're not going to be able to measure it later and know how you have done. So that is a concern. Only one of the departments that we surveyed met 80% of its priority output. Here we look at the output. And it is of concern that 67% of the departments were unable to link their output, service delivery indicators, and targets. And it appears that the strategic plans, estimates of expenditure, and annual reports do not talk to each other. So there's a disjuncture that happens in that regard. It is a source of concern. Our third principle of development orientation, we found that 38% performed above satisfactory, 31% at a satisfactory level, and 31% were underperforming. When we talk about development orientation, we're looking more broadly at the policy of the department in terms of driving the impetus of the developmental state. And what we're looking at is the extent to which the local development plans are in place. We found that 44% of the departments did not accommodate local development plans, and 38% of the departments did not always achieve their objectives. And lessons that were learned, 75% of them were unable to take it into consideration. So what we're talking about here is the extent to which the policy interfaces with the implementation. And there was a disjuncture that happened. So whilst at a policy level, there is an intention that there will be a development orientation, when it came to articulating with the different tiers, the local, the provincial, that did not happen very well. And we given an analytical narrative in the report of that element. We think it's important because it links directly to the whole question of service delivery. It links to the quality of service delivery as well. The fourth principle, the impartiality and fairness in service delivery, we have mentioned it, and it was a source of a lot of discussion in SOPS 2008. We found that above satisfactory, 56% of the departments perform, 13% underperform, and there's no performance or poor performance in 31% of the departments. Here we are looking at the question of PAJA, the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act, the extent to which the departments, in executing their role function, adhere to the legal precepts of decision-making. In other words, the legality. We found that 63% of the departments, they refer to applicable legislative policy in terms of decisions that need to be taken. 37% did not. 50% of the departments were unable to submit any documentation to assess whether decisions were taken by duly authorized officials in terms of department delegation of authority. This is a source of concern. What we look at is the root forms. We take a set of decisions and see whether the right people have taken the right decision at the right level. Because there's a whole question of legality at it. And it still remains a problem. There's been various reports presented to yourselves, also the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, on PAJA implementation. And we talk about it in the SOPS report in detail. On principle 5, high level, public participation in policy making, we found that performance above satisfactory was just 30%, with 70% of the departments either not performing or underperforming. It's a source of concern, and we've mentioned it, because if public participation has not been adequately entrenched in a department as a policy and implementation level, it means that departments are not actually able to predict what is going to happen. And I think the events of late have actually shown that there's been inadequate public participation in various elements of policy. Water Affairs had the best policy, the best performance here. They were able to demonstrate quite clearly that they were able to engage with the public or their clients or citizens when it came to their new policies. But we found that 13% of the departments did not even have a system for public participation, and if they had it, they didn't really utilize it. And whilst 31% of departments acknowledged the public input, it's of concern that 69% of them did not. So when we look at public participation, we look at when the public engages and says, this is what we would like. 70% of the departments just didn't even respond to the public. And this reinforces the notion that there's a non-responsive public service, which links to other reports that the Public Service Commission has produced and has been tabled to you. On accountability, it goes back to the rounds and tenths, but we're raising it to a higher level, and this is the level of scrutiny. And there's two things that we look at here. We look at the annual report, and we look at the whole question of fraud prevention and risk management. We found that above satisfactory, 44% of departments, at acceptable levels, only 6%, and underperformance, 50%. So we come to the issue here that 69% of the departments assessed did not receive a clean audit report, as a number of internal control weaknesses were highlighted by the Auditor General. So 70% of the departments were, and this coincides with the reports that you are receiving from the Auditor General, although we use the sample. 44% of the departments assessed did not have a comprehensive and appropriate fraud prevention plan that thorough risk assessment. And this leaves the department very vulnerable. So almost half didn't have a proper system to predict fraud. We found that most departments do not use optimally the system of VAT, Percel, Logis to manage information. And of concern that whilst we've spoken about M&E for many years, 31% of the departments assessed do not have any M&E system whatsoever. And of course, we produce other reports in that regard. So accountability is a concern in this regard. We come now to the last three principles, the first one being transparency. This is how open, if you switch on the lights in a department, what do you find? And it's the question of the annual report and, of course, the Promotion of Access to Information Act. As far as this goes, performance above satisfactory was 20% of the departments. At an acceptable level, 19%, underperformance 62% when it came to transparency. When we assess the departments, we are looking at annual reports. Are they well written, clear, and presented? We found that 88% of them did well here. 63% of them covered in sufficient detail areas of national treasury, and 50% reported clearly on their performance against predetermined output. So that's the first part, the annual report. The second part is Promotion of Access to Information Act, and we found that 50% of the departments did not appoint a deputy information officer. So there wasn't a nodal point in the department if anyone wanted information. And that is a piece that the PSC has done work on the Promotion of Access to Information report. They have produced a specific report in that regard. 20% did have a manual on access to information available, and 25% did have a system for managing requests for access to information. But the report itself is much richer in terms of talking to why transparency is important. We would argue from the PSC point of view that the annual report is really the M&E instrument, because the nature of the annual report clearly points to how a department beats a whole lot of indicators and ranges. We find that there's an improvement overall in the quality of annual reports, but it's not useful to have categories where people are weighed blank. The prescript from the prescribed format from National Treasury is not in all cases being followed. If it were followed, you'd be able to get a very incisive commentary on departmental performance. The last two principles, good human resource management and career development practices, underperformance 68%, no performance 6%, acceptable level 13%, above satisfactory 13%. We're looking at different elements here. The one that is always of discussion is recruitment and selection. And in terms of recruitment, we look at how long does it take to fill posts. In terms of skills development, are these plans in place? We found that 63% of the departments did not have a recruitment policy in place that complied with good practice standards. That 88% of the departments take time exceeds the 90 days. The average time to full post we found is 180 days, 6 months, as opposed to 3 months. So that's 88%. And that concurs with other surveys that have been done. And 56% of departments do not regularly report on recruitment. What we're talking about here is whether the management of a department knows at any one time how many posts they are, where are they, you know, in terms of the chain. Most of them don't, 56% of them did not have any management information. As far as skills development goes, in terms of what we're doing with the people, 50% of the departments had a skills development plan based on skills needs analysis. 20% had a plan, and 31% had no plan. Two departments did implement their skills development plans and assess the training impact on their service delivery. The issue we're raising here is because upfront, if there's going to be massified training that's coming in, one would want to know, one, has there been a skills audit, so you know what people need. But secondly, what has been the impact of the training? And we talk about it in a lot more detail. It should not just be training for the sake of going for training. It's about how do you to manage the process. The last principle, representativity, and I will talk in short about the targets. Here, the performance has generally been good. No performance in 20%, underperformance 56%, performance at an acceptable level 19%, and above satisfactory 6%. When we talk about these statistics, it needs to be broken up in terms of race, gender, and disability. As far as race goes, performance has been, in most cases, has met or exceeded the targets. Gender, targets of 30% have been met in most cases. The new target of 50%, most departments are a bit away. As far as disability goes, the target of 2%, we know the target of 2% has now been moved to 2010, but the actual performance stays at 1.79%. We found that when looking now at the actual, our sample, that 38% of the departments did report to management on employment equity, but 2% is not. So this is the internal process where you keep on the horizon what are the targets and how is the department performing. 13% of the departments met all the national representativity targets, race, gender, and disability. 31% of them met between 61 and 85%, and 25% met between 10 and 60% of these targets. So we've broken down the targets even further. The PSC, as you know, has produced various reports on affirmative action representativity. It's also in the soft report. We've mentioned that as far as gender goes, whilst the departments have met the 30%, it took them a long time and they battled to get to that level. There would have to be a big push to get to 50%, because another 20% would be about a 40% improvement on the current baseline. The other element that we look at is diversity management plans, the whole question of a diverse public service. And we found that 56% of the provincial departments did either not have or had not implemented any diversity management program. So whilst you had diverse persons working, there wasn't a plan or program to systematize it. We have then, at the end of the report, a set of recommendations, which we've highlighted. The first one, of course, is that departments should put in place a monitoring and evaluation system for handling cases of misconduct, that they should put in place early warning system for flagging underspending and non-achievement of objectives, because if they are in-year reporting and other measures, one should know well in advance before the end of the year whether one is going to meet one's targets or not. Departments should make the implementation of PAJA and delegations of authority a top priority in order to legitimize administrative decisions taken. This has been a repeat call from the Commission. We also say it's an area of vulnerability, because if decisions are taken outside the legal framework, it makes the department, it could be sued, etc., especially coming up with high-level events. And it's also the imperative that departments develop and implement a policy on public participation, on policymaking, to facilitate the procurement of inputs. Public participation, we have found, has been higher than it is right now. It seems to have waned. Departments seem to have become bureaucratized again. There isn't adequate engagement out with the citizens. There used to be a lot of that during the days of the green and white paper, as we mentioned in the SOPS report. But that high engagement has stopped. Many of our other reports show that citizens are beginning to feel alienated, and they manifest it in various ways, as we would know. And, of course, the internal control measures must be tightened, and risk management strategies is another area of concern. It has to be tightened as well. Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. It's a very comprehensive 100-page report I've tried to summarize it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Colleague, before we come to the stage of saying what's our way forward on this report, are there questions that was put forward, that they comment? I had, when the presentation was going on, a lot of responses that show that members were active, and I can appreciate the state of the situation as it is, which is actually a clear challenge. And I must say right from the onset that there is a perfect linkage between this report and the SOPS report, more especially in actually looking at the nine principles and the challenges that we can have. Colleagues, other questions and comments? Dr. Rukhmari? If I may check, follow up areas. Like, for instance, you may find that the state of the situation at a given point before this report was conducted, or maybe around that time, and the state of the situation now in Department A or B, you might find that on a particular issue, it is actually not the same. saying that at this stage the department has but now we have excellent, made tremendous improvement since the advent of the Public Service Commission's report and stuff like that. What would be the comment in as far as that? If we were to say today we table this report to Parliament and say, Parliament, this is what we then say needs to happen and should happen, like as a matter of extreme urgency. We take all the recommendations that are there. What are we likely going to experience if once we begin to engage government and stuff like that? What is worrisome, in fact, is to note that the area of public participation, as you've indicated, is one area that maybe there is greater room for improvement. You know, that's the challenge. The challenge, because that is where you may find meaning from what we sometimes call distortion. When, like, for instance, there are public demonstrations on issues of service delivery and stuff like that, it becomes a serious challenge. I'm not sure what would be your comment on that one. Colleagues, are there further? Well, let me give over to the Public Service Commission if there are follow-up. If the government wants to come in, then let's give the Commission to respond first to this one. The first one by Dr. Rukarin wants to say yes, no, it's a good report. We all endorse that.
Fine. Thank you, Chair. My colleagues will also pitch in here. We note and appreciate the comment from the members, from Member Mari, on the level and the standard of the report. We are dealing here with a very different, but I suppose one could easily say this is one of the most difficult parts of our mandate when it comes to getting into the nitty-gritties of departmental performance. And also the testing of the instruments that we design. We would like, as Naidu was saying in the introduction, that we have gone through 75 departments across the board. But there is also the dimension of time here, and as you correctly say, you know, you can go to a department today and find that it has advanced from the last time when the instrument was applied, because this is a very volatile sort of dynamic way of doing things. So there is always that gap. But also, you would have noticed that as Mr. Naidu was giving the report, there are examples of departments that have done well. Public enterprise has done, scored 100%. Those are highlights. Of achievement, really. And one would perhaps therefore say you would like to see more public enterprises departments in that respect, so one can be able to say public enterprises, Department of Agriculture, Department of Water Affairs, that's got 100% in this direction. That's the next stage, I think, that one would be wanting to move into that. But then there is also the broad sort of trend, in the matter of the value where the departments are required by the Constitution to create space for public participation. That is an area where one can say, purely on empirical evidence, the happenings that we see around, even before you get to the scientific report that Ivan is talking about, you can see that the behavior of the citizenry outside there is symptomatic of the lack of participation, consultation somewhere along the line. That is one aspect of this. But I think what one is actually also saying here is that this kind of report, this research, will always be work in progress. As we go on applying it, we unravel more evidence, but also we discover, I'm sure, I hope, that the departments gain and grow in maturity in this regard. I don't know if my colleague, Commissioner Marshall, would like to add something on this one.
now at a point where we are going back to certain departments. This year, for example, we returned to the Department of Social Development after 5 years. We did them in 2002-03 cycle, and when I did the presentation to them a few weeks ago, we had the old score. We are very curious to see what the new score is. So we'd not only be comparing them to their peers for this year, and historically, we'll be comparing them to themselves previously. So we are quite curious to see those results. And the baseline actually shows us now whether there's been an improvement or not. It would be useful for the committee to see a sample of one of the departmental reports, because they're standardized. They're about 60 pages, but you get, in reading that report, and this is the feedback that we've got from, the system has been tested internationally as well, is that even if you've never worked in the department, you know the department very well by the time you come to the 60th page. Because not only it has statistical information, it also has qualitative analysis. It tells the story of how the department works. So we try to balance it. It's based on evidence, but we also put an interpretive dimension to it. So we could make available a sample of the department that we have that completed. The other point which we tightened our system, before we used to take quite long to give them feedback, many months. We now, within 4 months, from the time we implant the research in the department till the time it goes to top management, 4 months we do it. Because we learned with the evaluation, if you don't give quick feedback, then there's other drama. There's a lot of gossip happens when you do evaluation. People get tense.